Thank you. Chief Justice Steele, Justice Jacobs, Justice Holland, Justice Berger, Justice Ridgely, may it please the court. My name is Mike Hyden, and I represent Torrey Holmes. Today, we're here to address a question that the court raised, and the court asked for a supplemental memorandum concerning a newspaper article and whether that was the admission of that article was harmless error. In the state's memorandum, they indicated that the burden is on the state to demonstrate beyond a reasonable doubt that the erroneously admitted evidence was harmless error, and I agree with that. Now, there's two areas of inquiry that the state raises, and one is whether there was sufficient independent evidence to support the conviction. Another area of inquiry would be whether the evidence affected a substantial right. I would argue that under both areas of inquiry, that defendant Holmes should prevail. As to whether there was sufficient independent evidence, the state's brief essentially just compares the evidence or the information that is in the article with testimony of state's witnesses. And they argue or say essentially the article agrees with the state's witnesses with one minor exception about the defendant being held without bail or he couldn't make bail and so was in jail. But essentially they say the article agrees with the testimony and therefore it didn't offer anything new and was harmless. I don't think that's the right test. I think when the court makes the inquiry, the proper thing to do is to look at all the evidence, look at the evidence of the defense and the evidence of the state. In this case, we had two crimes. One was a carjacking. And in that case, the state presented their opening argument to the jury. And they said that this guy, Freeman, was driving down the road on a snowy day, and he came upon a stranger, and he offered him a ride. And that guy pulled a gun, told him to get out of the car, and drove away. In the second crime, the state tells the jury in their opening that Medina Elder and Harry Smith are home watching TV and hear a knock on the door. And again, a stranger is there, and he has a gun, and he comes in the house and takes their money and runs away. Now, that's the state's first argument to the jury, and that's essentially what that newspaper article said. When you look at the cross-examination and you look at what those witnesses also said, you found out that Freeman and Holmes were not strangers. They had met each other at an Eagles party a couple months beforehand.
Mr. Hayden, yes? just to make it easier for me at least to follow your argument, let me just go back a step.
Sure.
You did tee up the issue of harmless error, you know, by identifying the state's argument, which is that the article essentially recapitulates testimony by several independent witnesses, and then you go on to say, but that's not enough. After that, you then launch into a very detailed factual exposition, and I'm not sure what the because is. Why isn't it enough to constitute harmless error?
Because I think rather than looking at one side of the evidence, you have to look at both sides of the evidence. This is not a situation where on review we look at the evidence in the light most favorable to the state, or we're looking to decide whether the jury's decision was not supported by the facts. I think what you do is you look at the evidence, and you look at the evidence balanced by both sides.
Well, I thought your point was that if we look at the article and we're going to find significant factual matters in the article that weren't presented at trial, and if we look at these specific factual matters that weren't presented at trial by witnesses, they can't be harmless. So can you list for us the harmful facts to your client that are in the article that no one testified about?
There was only one that I mentioned, that he was held on default of bail. But my position is this, is that on review, when you look at the evidence, you have to consider not just whether there was bad evidence by the article, but you have to consider the evidence and whether there was independent evidence to sustain the conviction. And when you make that examination, you have to look at the evidence that was favorable to the state, and you have to look at the evidence that was harmful to the state. And especially in this situation where you have three lay witnesses presented by the state, and their credibility is going to be important. And that's something that the jury is going to have to consider and weigh.
That's true whenever the state has live witnesses.
Correct.
But the question here is whether the newspaper article adds anything, number one, adds anything substantive to what the witnesses said, and secondly, whether, if it did, that substantive added information was prejudicial.
Well, respectfully, I don't think the question is whether it added anything to the evidence. I think on review, I don't think it's a situation where we just say, did they add anything to the evidence? I think it's a situation where we look at the totality of the evidence and we say, if we take that article out, is there still significant independent evidence to justify the jury's decision? And the state has to prove that, not just by a preponderance of the evidence, but I believe that they have to prove it beyond a reasonable doubt. And when you consider that, and when you consider the credibility of these witnesses, I think you have to consider the fact that there was a lot of, not just inconsistencies, but I think outright misstatements and lies by these witnesses that covered up their relationship with Corey Holmes and what happened on this particular day.
Mr. Hyden, and then your point is that the newspaper article could be construed by the jury as an objective recitation of the facts that bolstered the credibility of the witnesses, and that but for the article and its, quote, objective nature, the jury would have resolved the credibility issues differently.
Yes. And I think what happens is that, you know, in our experience when jurors, you know, testimony in court is something that's fleeting. It goes on for a second and you hear it, and then the juries, they go back to the jury box and then they ask each other, you know, what did he say, or what can you clarify that? And often we see them ask the trial judge for a transcript. The judge says you can't have a transcript. In this case, they had a written record by a newspaper reporter that they were able to take into the jury box to look at, to consider when they were looking at the credibility of the witness. And this written record they could review, and presumably it was by someone who, we think when a reporter writes something, they check their sources, they do an independent investigation, and it's a fair and balanced report.
In other words, it would be objective truth, at least to a jury. Is that what you're saying?
Yes. And what we know in this case is that report did not contain any of the negative information about these witnesses, that they were convicted drug dealers, that they had hidden their relationship with Corey Holmes from the police, that Corey Holmes, after the crime where he took the car, called up Freeman and told him where he could pick the car up, when presumably they were strangers, and he calls them up.
Let me interrupt for a second. If I understand the record correctly, trial counsel made all those points in cross-examining the witnesses and basically emphasized the fact that these witnesses should not be believed, right?
Yes.
Okay. So why should we conclude that an article that repeats essentially the the bare bones of what the witnesses said without the additional information that would suggest perhaps you shouldn't believe them, why would that be any different than the jury heard what they had to say on direct and thought, oh, that sounds sensible, and then on cross they hear something that makes them have some questions? What did the newspaper article do to change what would have been the result just by the examination and the cross-examination?
Well, because the newspaper article was not based on the direct and cross-examination, but it was based upon a one-sided statement, presumably from the police officer. And it bolstered their witness, and it's from someone who I would suggest who is, if they're in the jury box as a juror, they're like a super juror. They have a written record that they're presenting to the jury that presumably or someone thinks is objective and independent, and it was not. And it wasn't objective. It wasn't independent. It wasn't written by a reporter who had personal knowledge of the facts, who had witnessed anything, who had interviewed any of the defense witnesses, who knew about the criminal record of the state's witnesses. Now, so that was my concern.
Well, your concern seemed to be based on the assumption that the jury took the newspaper article for the truth of what was contained in it and would therefore have a platform for confirming the state's witnesses. The state, on the other hand, who offered this article for God knows what reason, now argues that it really wasn't offered for the truth of the matter. It's offered for some other reason. So it's hearsay, but otherwise admissible. What's your response to that?
I really don't know, because I could not figure out why whatever reason they would offer it other than to be as evidence against my client. And in the cases cited by the state, the last one was Funkhauser. And in that case, what happened is that the newspaper article talked about the crime. It didn't identify the defendant in that case as the person who committed the crime. But what happened there is somebody read the article to the defendant, and the defendant reacted and said, oh, I'm in trouble. Now, in that case, they offered the evidence, the article, to show how he reacted as evidence of the crime. I can understand that. But in this situation, this was an article that I don't know why they offered it. When we first talked about it, what would be used, we agreed that the photograph was going to go in and that the text was not. And when they offered the text, I objected. And that was the same scenario that we see in the second case cited by the state, which is State versus Locklear. That's the other case, the People versus Mitchum. In that case, the attorneys agreed that the photographs would go into evidence, but the text would not. And then when the defense attorney looked at the evidence upon review, he thought that the text had gone into evidence. The court in that case made an inquiry, and they saw that the trial clerk put a note on the evidence that the text would not go into evidence. And they thought the defense attorney did not sustain the burden in that case. But what they pointed out was that the defendant in that case did not testify, and the defendant was not identified in the article. So in that respect, the case is different. Here, Corey Holmes was identified as being the person who committed the crime.
All right,
go ahead.
In this case, the prosecution offered the concept of a limiting instruction initially, did it not?
Well, that it was an offer for the truth of the matter asserted. Yeah. Well, I don't know where that would get me. I didn't want that document in. And my other concern was this, Your Honor.
Well, before you get to your other concern, why wasn't a limiting instruction given?
The I don't recall whether we drafted one or the issue was just dropped. But I don't recall, Your Honor.
Was it a tactical decision on your part?
No. I don't recall.
If I'm quoting correctly, my understanding is the state presented the text of the article to Holmes while he was on the stand, and the rationale was to question his, quote, credibility and the issue of recent fabrication, close quote. Now, my concern is you offer an article which purports to assert facts, and you offer it for the purpose of contradicting another person's testimony and attacking his credibility. How do you do that without asserting that what's in the article is the truth?
Yes, that's true. I agree with that. And
how can it be offered not for its truth if its very purpose is to question the truthfulness of another witness?
I think that's what lawyers say sometimes to get into evidence. I think that's so, I think at one point they said they thought maybe he had tailored his testimony to agree with the article,
yeah, that's the fabrication prong of the.
Well, I couldn't see how they would argue that he tailored his argument to agree with the newspaper article, because the newspaper article was harmful to him, and it wasn't
so to follow up
a good
on
avenue
the,
for him
to follow up on the Chief Justice's line of questioning. The article. If, in fact, it was used to attack credibility, was hearsay, because in order to attack the defendant's credibility, the article would have to be presented either implicitly or explicitly as the truth. That would be one argument. The other argument, that would be one basis for objecting it to its admission. Another would be, even if it isn't hearsay, the prejudice that results from the admission of the article outweighs whatever relevance it may have. Did you make both of those arguments?
Well, especially my concern was that the judge that if this article goes in, the jury might conclude that because it's in the paper, it must be true. And that's what I said to the trial judge.
So you made
judge.
The substance of a 403 argument?
Yes. And my other concern was this, and actually I'm running low on time here. The second inquiry is whether the admission of this newspaper article effects of substantial right of the client, and I think that it does. And the substantial right that it affects is my client's right to cross-examine witnesses. This newspaper reporter's account of what happened, in effect, was evidence that was the equivalent of testimony against my client. And if I could have cross-examined him, I could have asked him the basis of the testimony of his report, and the fact that he had only made an inquiry to one side, that he had no personal knowledge, he did not witness any of the events, I think would have undermined the impact of this newspaper article when it was sent back to the jury. The jury may have looked at it with some scrutiny and would have been dubious about the accuracy of the report once they knew that it was only a cursory investigation and only was a one-sided investigation.
Did you argue to the jury that the newspaper article is essentially worthless because it's nothing but an inaccurate summary of what some reporter was told?
No, I didn't want to focus on a newspaper article. And the other idea, when you think about it, is this, is that when a ruling is going to come down from this court on this issue, how is it going to be expanded? Is there going to be another case down the road where somebody is going to talk to somebody? Corey Holmes's grandmother is going to talk to Corey Holmes, and then she's going to want to write a letter to the jury and tell them, well, this is what happened. Of course that's not going to go in. And why not? Well, the reason, obviously, is that it's hearsay. She has no personal knowledge, and she's probably biased. What would be different from her doing that than the newspaper reporter is because the fallback, which we think would be true, is that the newspaper reporter is accurate and unbiased and complete.
Is this a true or accurate or inaccurate statement? Each factual assertion, except for Holmes' transport to the hospital, made in the Delaware Online article, had already been admitted into evidence through a proper testimonial source before the Superior Court admitted the article during the state's rebuttal case. Is that an accurate statement?
I think there may, pretty much. I think there may be something else where they said he was held in default of bail. But that's essentially correct.
All right.
Did you want to save the balance of your time?
Yes. Thank you.
May it please the Court, Deputy Attorney General Gregory Smith, on behalf of the state. Your Honor, this Court can feel confident beyond a reasonable doubt that any error involved in the admission of the News Journal article in the state's rebuttal case was harmless. And the reason the Court can feel so confident is for the fact that the information contained in that article had already come out through proper witnesses.
Now, that's what fascinates me about the prosecutor offering the newspaper article to produce facts contained within a newspaper article that were otherwise already in evidence. What was the purpose of using the article if all of the facts it spoke to that were relevant to the trial were already in evidence, if not to corroborate the sources of that evidence?
Your Honor, that goes to the context in which it was admitted in rebuttal. That on cross-examination during the defense case in chief, Mr. Holmes had taken the stand. And he had been, I guess if I may backtrack a little bit to explain, when he was initially arrested, he was only arrested by Wilmington police as related to what we'll call the home invasion crimes. And it wasn't until later that the county police arrested him for the carjacking incident that had taken place earlier in the day. At the time, the individual involved in the carjacking, Rashawn Freeman, although he had immediately reported the crime to the police, he had not identified Mr. Holmes. From seeing the article, he was then able to go to the police twice to say, this was who's involved with me. So then the police, in conducting the interview of Mr. Holmes while he was held in default of bail, talked to him about that and the fact of the newspaper article. So then that information was in front of the jury that Mr. Holmes had read the newspaper article when interviewed by Detective Polk. The prosecutor was apparently trying to show that he'd been able to tailor statements that he made to the detective to try to help explain information that he knew the police already knew had taken place. I'm sorry, that was sort of a long answer, but it was there, that last part at the end, to show that when Mr. Holmes had spoken to Detective Polk, he had tailored his answers based on the knowledge that he had within the article.
So you're saying that the purpose of introducing the article was not to bolster the credibility of the state's witnesses, but to undermine the credibility of Mr. Holmes?
That's correct, Your Honor. Yes, Your Honor.
Did Sergeant Stephen Barnes testify in the case?
No, Your Honor.
So didn't the article essentially provide testimony from Sergeant Barnes or information from Sergeant Barnes, because he's directly mentioned as the source?
That would be the police spokesperson who was apparently summarizing the police report.
But he became essentially another witness through the newspaper article, didn't he?
If And Your Honor, that's the state acknowledges that the lack of a limiting instruction is improper. If there had been a limiting instruction to the jury, then it would have been clear it wasn't being offered for the truth of the matter asserted in the article, simply for the purpose of showing that Mr. Holmes had tailored his responses in the interview with Detective Polk.
And it wasn't used just for impeachment purposes. It was actually introduced as an exhibit and went into the jury room.
Yes, it
why was
did.
It not simply used, if it's appropriate to use it the way you've described, why was it actually admitted as a freestanding exhibit rather than just being used to impeach Holmes during rebuttal while he was testifying?
Your Honor, certainly the state would prefer if that had been the manner in which it had been used.
It suggests to someone naive like me that the state actually wanted the jury to consider it as real evidence, hard evidence in front of them that they could look to during their deliberation rather than just to make the point that the defendant had read the newspaper article and tailored his own testimony consistent with it.
Your Honor, I would respectfully say I think it was more of a heat-of-the-moment submission in rebuttal by the prosecution.
Well, that gets me to my concern, and maybe this is just rhetorical, but why would the state risk a conviction by presenting and then arguing for successfully the introduction of this evidence, especially in rebuttal? Because if you're putting this in rebuttal, aren't you as much as saying that, you know, we don't think necessarily we can win this case based upon the state's original case and the defense case, so now in rebuttal we're going to add a little extra? Doesn't that almost compel us to find that it was not harmless error?
Your Honor, the state absolutely acknowledges this is not a best practices sort of incident here. The state can certainly advocate to you firmly, though, that the court can decide the error is harmless based on the five witnesses who had testified regarding the home invasion crimes and that this article really didn't add anything to their testimony at all. That has to be the basis on which this court can affirm, certainly not as an endorsement of the submission of the article in rebuttal.
Yeah, that's interesting. If it didn't add anything at all, how does it pass a 403 test of its relevance and probative value outweighing the danger of unfair prejudice? It doesn't add anything at all.
Your Honor, it doesn't add anything. It only subtracts from Mr. Holmes' testimony.
Why wasn't there a limiting instruction?
Your Honor, I truly do not know why there was not a limiting instruction.
Well, you would think when the state says to the judge, we don't want to admit this for the truth of its content, and we have this other reason for admitting it, somebody should tell the jury that. And since the state's the proponent of the evidence, why wouldn't the state say, please tell that to the jury?
Your Honor, that must have been an oversight at that time. It's certainly not one the state's asking the court to admire, but simply to say that error still is harmless beyond a reasonable doubt.
Okay, let's get to the substance of that. Let's assume that there's an argument that it was error. Tell us why it's not plain error and why it's harmless error that doesn't justify a new trial.
Certainly we're not in the situation that the court faced in Sanabria. The only evidence that this court saw for the basis for that home burglary was the statement from the security company that the motion detector had been set off, meaning that somebody had in fact been in the house. Here, the jury had heard from five witnesses: Medina Elder, Harry Smith, Robert Bovell, Officer Crocker, and Officer Dorsey, I believe. And that we were not simply in a he said, she said sort of situation. There was substantial corroboration among those five witnesses of the state's case in chief. The only real...
You're talking about the home invasion part of it.
Correct, Your Honor, because the article only dealt with the home invasion. The article did not mention the carjacking whatsoever.
There was only one witness to the carjacking, right?
That's correct, Your Honor. That the only... as far as the carjacking, there's Mr. Freeman's mother's testimony about the recovery of the car. That goes to something after the fact of the crime. But I guess I don't want to say.
What's the reason that the trial judge tells the jurors every day not to read newspaper articles about the case?
Your Honor, because they're not supposed to hear any evidence outside of that which is presented to them in the courtroom. And
except in this case, the very article they were instructed not to read on their own was read to them and sent into the jury room.
The court did look at the article before its admission. It did perform a gatekeeping function and recognized that the information contained within the article had already entered the court through proper witnesses who had been subject to cross-examination. Therefore, the state would request that this court affirm the judgment of the Superior Court.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I don't have anything further. I'll answer any questions the court has.
Anyone have questions? All right. Thank you, counsel. We'll take the case under advisement and recess.
Thank you.